From the Lynn de Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 29th day of August, 2024. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Matt Bennett from AgMarket.net. I'll introduce you to John Jones. He's the new Extension Soil Fertility Specialist based here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I. And we'll talk about the weather, too. We'll do that with Mike Tenor at T-Storm Weather on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
September corn for the day settled at $3.71¾, up 6.5 cents. December at $3.96, 5¼ higher. And the March at $4.14, up 4¼ cents. September beans, $9.73¼, up 15¾. November up 15½ at $9.92½. And January at $10.08¾, up 14¼. The soft red at 7¼ higher, finished at $5.48¾ in the December. The hard red up 4¾ at $5.60½ for the day. Matt Bennett from AgMarket.net now joins us to take a look at the marketplace. Hi, Matt. Thanks for being with us. Let's start with soybeans today. A little rally there. I think that led the marketplace. Could be wrong. What have you been watching?
You know, it certainly seemed like that's what led the rally. I mean, all in all, you know, the overnight market wasn't anything super exciting. But then, you know, you come in here during the session and you continue to kind of push up on this 20-day moving average. I mean, the long-term downtrend that started back in late May, early June is probably, you know, still intact after today. So I don't know, Todd. I mean, we've been trying to look at analog years. It's tough. Now, of course, you have support under you with the 10-day beneath the market, but we went for so long without having any support under us. We had to look for different years to compare to. And, you know, as of right now, we're still unconvinced that the selling is over. We kind of feel like there's a lot of end of the month buying. And we feel like that kind of spilled over not only in the soybeans, but in the corn as well, and of course, the wheat market, too.
How much support does a 10-day moving average actually offer?
Not much. It's just that it's kind of a, you know, it's something in the back of your head. You know, I mean, we actually finally get ourselves above a level where, you know, where we actually have something beneath us, you know. And so I don't know. I mean, overall, you got to look at the continuous chart. You got to look at a couple, three different things. And one of the things we've been looking at, of course, you know, is that long-term continuous. And right now, I just don't necessarily see reason to get real friendly, especially given the fundamentals. So, you know, I feel like if you would look at some of these analog years we've been looking at, you know, for beans, it's actually the 25 chart versus the 2015 chart, and it's very, very highly correlated, you know. And after the 1st of September, you know, that chart kind of went south on us. I'm not saying it's going to happen, Todd, but fundamentally, there's not a lot of reasons to get super friendly here. Exports are fantastic today, but boy, we need several weeks like that if we're going to ever reach that USDA goal. And this is a time where the Mississippi River continues to show lower draft levels, which is super concerning to me right now.
Yeah, China and unknown destinations both in for purchases of new crop soybeans, correct?
Absolutely, yeah. And so you got to maybe assume some of those unknowns are China as well. You know, we went forever without any Chinese new crop purchases. Finally got a hold of some. But bottom line is, you know, again, the USDA was very aggressive in their new crop export number. And so, you know, we've got a lot of work to do to be able to catch up to that.
When you look at those longer term charts, when you're looking back at 2015, what kind of downside targets are there?
Well, I don't know if we want to talk about it, Todd, to be honest. you know, you're looking down there around 856, 850 area. But I think 856 was the number that we came up with. And I'm not saying it's going to do that by any means. But you stop and think about it, Todd. You know, even though the Brazilians are talking less aggressive growth in bean plantings, they're still going to plant beans once again. I believe it's at least the 19th straight year, you know. And so if that's the case, the U.S. grower looks, in my opinion, like they could be poised for more beans as well, you know. So what would prices look like this time next year, you know, if you have global production that's just average with bigger acres? And so I don't know. I'm just a little bit concerned longer term, you know, that maybe we at least need to be protecting ourselves here.
What have you been watching in the corn market?
You know, in the corn market, it's more of the same. You know, the funds have been able to kind of get out of their positions and not have to drive the market sharply higher. End of month position, of course, you got first notice day. coming. I mean, bottom line on this corn market is you've got plenty of stocks as well. But it's certainly not a super bullish situation. But what it is after you get into September, you're going to be getting into the WASDE, you're going to be getting into harvest, and you got to ask yourself, where's the bullish news going to come from? So, maybe some of these areas that didn't get rain maybe make a bullish case. But at the same time, we just got so much stock sitting around that it makes it hard, to think that we're going to get a rally that's got too much sustaining effort there.
Is there any thought that the heat, although it came with rain this week, has taken the top off of the corn? And what does that mean if that's really the case?
I think that most of the April corn, of course, was far enough along. The May corn that got a little bit of this mid-August rain probably was also okay. But I think some of it that maybe missed some of that, you probably had some of the top was taken off of it. So I don't know how much, but 225 for Illinois might be a touch rich. I do think after being in Iowa Farm Progress Show this week, I've got to think that that Iowa crop is a little bigger than what the USDA said. So, I think that overall, this total crop size might be a shade smaller than USDA, but I don't know that it's quite necessarily down there where Pro Farmer came in a couple bushel lower.
Is that from your discussions with farmers, from being in the field, or from both?
Both. I was able to get, I ran across Route 36 this week before Farm Progress Show, 2 hours into Kansas. And, actually, 36 over into Kansas, there's going to be a lot of corn picked there in the next 10 days. A lot of that corn's kind of given up the ghost. It looks pretty good still, but, there's not a whole lot of color in it. And then I meandered my way back up into Iowa. And, so I was able to come in from the southwest and then, going back to the east. I mean, I've seen a fair amount of the state. And so there's no doubt that that Iowa crop, pretty good size. And talking to growers, there's a lot of folks thinking they've got a record crop.
Man, that southwest corner apparently looks really good.
Yes, absolutely. And it doesn't always, it's, I would equate that to, sometimes people say if Southern Illinois is really good, Illinois's got a shot at really a banger of a crop, which is where we're at this year. And I think that's the same type of thing whenever you look at that southwest portion of Iowa.
Hey, thanks much. We'll talk to you again soon.
Oh, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Matt Bennett is with agmarket.net. You're listening to the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online, on demand, anytime you'd like at willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find information from the agricultural economist, the crop scientist, and the animal scientist from the University of Illinois, along with our daily ag programming and a way to subscribe to our podcast, including this program, Commodity Week, and the Illinois Nutrient Loss Reduction Podcast. The theme music for today's program is written, performed, and produced by Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. Start of the new semester here on the Urbana-Champaign campus sometimes means there are new faces in the classrooms and also in the farm fields. That's the case this year. John Jones is an associate professor of agronomy in the Department of Crop Sciences and the new Extension Soil Fertility Specialist. I asked him to tell us just a little bit about himself.
I grew up on a small farm in South Central Wisconsin. Was always really involved on our farm operations on the livestock and crop side. I was fortunate enough to go to Kansas State University for my bachelor's degree in agronomy and soil science, and then Iowa State University for my master's and PhD in soil fertility. Between my master's and PhD and coming to University of Illinois, I had held positions in industry, but most recently as a soil fertility and plant nutrition researcher at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, where I was doing soil fertility research and extension.
You have a lot of land grant background with you then.
Yes, we're a very supportive family of Midwestern land grants and have really enjoyed being at on campus at some great ones and the people that they support.
Tell me about why you were interested in soil fertility.
Well, I think the discipline or subdiscipline of soil fertility really encapsulates a lot of interesting components of crop production, agronomic, and then environmental quality sides as well. We're working with things like applied chemistry, applied physics, incorporating things like hydrology of soils and systems. But then also we're looking at essentially some plant physiology responses to different nutrient and management. How I always really enjoy talking about soil fertility in the classroom is we're kind of chemists and biologists, but a lot of the times we put number values on things. And so we're thinking about not only the biophysics of it, but the economic value to farmers, essentially.
Like many of those who have outreach and extension functions, you are teaching classes here on campus. What kinds of things will you be teaching this semester?
So this semester, I'm co-teaching part of a crop production class within the Department of Crop Sciences. That's a virtual class that's taught through different components of crop production systems, crop physiology, entomology, pest management. I'll be teaching the soil science part of that.
Can you tell me about your outreach and extension work and what you hope to accomplish here?
The outreach and extension work is really what drove me to be interested in this position, actually. The ability to, for my research to then be applied and be put in an actionable form for farmers to use is something I'm really excited about. In terms of what that looks like, it will be a lot of maybe you would consider traditional research studies that can be crafted into outreach publications, outreach media. But then also, I really envision an expansive research program across the state that captures our different crops and soils and cropping systems. But then those can be used to create either decision support tools or media and a place where information can be queried and farmers can really find what from that research fits their specific operation. And how can that be lead to some type of adaptive management that's profitable?
What studies do you hope to continue? How might you change them, if at all? And what studies might you think about beginning?
Sure. Well, I'm really excited to be kind of a part of a long tradition of studies looking at, for example, nitrogen, optimum nitrogen rates and management and timing and placement. Those are things that I'll look forward to working with previous and current faculty on and really great stakeholders around the state. So I'm kind of jumping on board to be involved in that process pretty immediately. Actually, I'm right now and look forward to continuing that and expanding it around the state. My research background is, again, it's in soil fertility work, mostly in soil test calibrations, but then also nitrogen demand and predicting needed fertilizer amounts. And so with kind of taking that into context, what I'm really excited to do is kind of identify these regions of the state where management is a little bit different, soils are a little bit different, and I can adjust my program to have kind of these regional hubs of questions that farmers are trying to answer there. That may be around nitrogen management and timing and placement. That may be around different soil test interpretations or even different very specific interpretations, let's say for a variable rate liming recommendation or something like that. So really, really excited to include the very local geography and questions that farmers are trying to answer.
These will be very data intensive, I would think. Will you be trying to enlist farmers to gather data from their own equipment and to use that or to borrow it in some form?
I really think that the future of soil fertility research, and actually a lot being done right now, is an integration of production level operations. And so working with farmers we put studies or trials out on their own fields, whether that just kind of fits into their, let's say, fertilizer application and harvesting and planting operations, and designing those trials so that it really answers, again, those questions that are specific to that operation and region. Certainly, this is a very data intensive kind of effort or system of efforts I'm envisioning. It includes a lot of collaboration, but not just, I would say, on the carrying out of the research or how we carry out the work, but also the planning phase. So I really envision having groups of farmers and practicing agronomists around the state that are telling me what those questions are, and then we work together to design studies that are going to fit not only on the on-farm system, but then answering the questions we want to. So I really look forward to integrating farmers and agronomists around the state from the planning phase to the execution and then eventually the interpretation of the results.
Hey, John, thank you much. I appreciate it and look forward to working with you.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Todd. I'm really excited to be getting around the state, not only in my first few weeks and semester on campus, but also throughout my time at University of Illinois. I'm really, really pumped to be working with some great farmers, agronomists around the state, a really talented group of colleagues and faculty members here at the university, and excited to serve Illinois Ag in my position in research extension teaching.
That's John Jones. He's an associate professor of agronomy in the Department of Crop Sciences here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois and the Extension Soil Fertility Specialist. We look forward to hearing much more from him in the near future. Let's turn our attention to the global growing regions and the climate in each of those. Here to discuss that is the president and CEO of T-Storm Weather. That's tstorm.net online, Mike Tenura. Hi, Mike. Thanks for being with us again.
Hey, thanks for having me, Todd. Great to be here.
Let's start in the United States, in the Midwest. A lot of heat, a little rainfall. What comes next?
Well, we'll see some thunderstorms over the next 36 hours. The cool front is moving across the Corn Belt as we speak, and that will move across the entire Corn Belt through tomorrow. We're not looking for heavy rain with this setup, but a quarter of an inch to three quarters of an inch looks like a pretty good probability for most corn and soybeans over the next 36 hours. Once we get beyond that, there's not any rain in the forecast. It looks very dry for the Corn Belt and the northern half of the plains going forward, and we don't think there will be very much rain over the first 7 to 10 days of September. So this is pretty much it for corn and soybeans for this season, because once we get beyond September 7th to 10th, then you start thinking more about harvesting and things like that, as opposed to how rainfall might affect yields.
When you look back across the whole of the season and think about the way it's ending, where are the places that have suffered? And I ask that because there don't seem to be very many of them.
Well, you're right. There just isn't a real clear story to this growing season. Sometimes we have areas that get super wet or super dry, and you can really focus on them. But this year, it hasn't been like that. We've seen some dry areas develop and some wet areas develop. But I think there is no doubt that the best place to be was Central Illinois this year. There was a lot of great rain events throughout the last 60 days. And those even continued a couple of days ago, where we saw a surprise rain to the north of Decatur and Champaign. So that's probably where the best spot is, actually, we would argue, you know, just based on the data that we can see. The tricky thing about this season, though, is that it has been drying out steadily over the last 30 days. And even though it might not be striking where it's completely dry across a big area, we've just been kind of spoon-feeding some rain events to these crops over the last month or so. And because of that, it's a little bit difficult to determine how this season is going to end. If you look at the rain that's coming up over the next 36 hours and just include that with the Corn Belt total for the month of August, it'll end up being around number 15 driest of the last 65 years across the seven-state Corn Belt in August. And if you look at July and August as a whole, it'll actually be a tiny bit drier than normal. Now, is this enough to cause some major concerns? No, but it's unlikely that you're going to have one of your best crops on record with that type of rainfall. On top of that, temperatures have been a little bit tricky too. We've seen some heat at different periods of time like we have this week, but between these heat periods, we've seen cool periods. And if you add all that up, temperatures will end up being a little bit cooler than normal, which tends to favor yields. So, Todd, this is not one of those great growing seasons, at least from a weather standpoint, where you can really zone in on different issues and really get a good handle on exactly what's going on, because we've been kind of broad brushing these crops with some good weather and some poor weather, and it's never lasted long enough to really get anything major going.
It will make the objective yields that USDA will take and is taking now in the field really important when it develops the next crop production report to be released in September. Turn your attention to other parts of the planet. It's been hot and dry and remains that way in parts of Ukraine and Russia. Can you tell me about conditions there?
Well, Ukraine is having one of their worst growing seasons. I mean, it has to be just based on the numbers that we can see. If we look at their rainfall over the last 7 days, 14 days, and then 30, 60, and 90 days, basically most of that crop was drier than normal over those periods of time. 100% of the crop was drier than normal over the last 7 and 14 days, 95% over the last 30 days, 87% over the last 60 days, and over that 90-day period, 68%. I mean, these are really big numbers, but of more concern than that, Todd, and this might be a little bit surprising to hear, are the temperatures. They've been averaging a whopping 5.8 degrees warmer than normal on corn production over the last 90 days. I mean, this is a really high temperature to have for that period of time. And even the last 7 days averaged 10 degrees above normal. Just to give you some idea, in the United States, temperatures over the last 7 days have averaged about 4 degrees warmer than normal. And you know what that feels like with some of the heat we've seen in Illinois being offset by the Dakotas. But all in all, it's been really hot there, much warmer than anything that they've seen recently. And that has to be a problem for corn in Ukraine as well as their sunflowers. And then also nearby areas of Bulgaria, Romania, and then extending over to Russia. So this is probably where the biggest concerns have been over the course of the season. And we'll see how all of that plays out. We just have to kind of wait and see when the harvest reports start up here pretty soon.
Let's go to South America. Let's go to the Southern Hemisphere. Hang on. Let's go to the Southern Hemisphere now. Turn your attention to Australia. Let's go to the Southern Hemisphere now. Turn your attention to Australia. How is the wheat crop faring as it comes out of dormancy?
Well, they kind of have two wheat crops if you look at how it's produced. They have Western Australia, where about half of the wheat comes from, and they've had a great winter with a lot of rain, and so things are looking good there. In Eastern Australia, it hasn't been as nearly as nice. They've been drier than normal over the last several months, and you could easily classify them as being in a drought. As we move forward, all these areas are not going to see very much rain, so you're going to see deteriorating conditions across all of the wheat areas, but the real problem is going to be in that eastern half, where it's already been dry to start the season, because as you noted, they're going to be breaking into their key periods here over the next several weeks. So that'll be something to watch as well. But at this point in time, the story isn't quite there yet because they did have a lot of rain in the winter on half of that crop, and there's still time to get out of this situation. But rainfall doesn't look very good for the next couple of weeks with a couple of areas of high pressure dominating. And then on top of that, it'll be very hot, especially with northward extent into New South Wales and Queensland, and that's where about a third of their crop comes from. So certainly something to watch in Australia.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Todd.
You're welcome. Mike Tenora is with T-Storm Weather at tstorm.net online. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world, online, on demand, anytime you'd like at willag.org.